also down in Guatemala and other places where they were training everything from jungle warfare to jungle warfare to you know, like poisons, explosives, you name it, whatever way that you needed to know how to take someone out, they were trained in it. So once this group was put together, and please remember that George Bush Senior was the paymaster. He was not the guy personally paying them, but he was the guy collecting the funds from many of the big companies, many from the mob and from the oil tycoons in Texas and so on, and then pushing the funds into this group, making them super equipped with everything they needed and so on. And the first task was to take out Fidel Castro, which they tried several times but did not succeed. Then after the Cuban Missile Crisis in 62, when it turned out that the Russian leader Khrushchev was sending a ship with missiles going towards Cuba, and Cuba is only like 90 miles offshore from Miami, from Florida. So it freaked the American government. It totally freaked them out. So what happened was there was a major crisis where it came to a point where the American government said, if this ship crosses this longitude, we're going to press the button and we will start the Third World War, a nuclear war. And at that point, Kennedy had been elected. He had just won over Richard Nixon with only 100,000 votes, a very, very close race, and with the help of the Chicago mob, especially through his father, to get into that position. In the beginning, he was very easily manipulated by the elite and so on. But then came this situation with the Cuban Missile Crisis. Mm. And people who were there in the war room, they said that Kennedy sat there with tears in his eyes, and the whole military industrial complex, the generals, NSA, all of them were just saying, press it, you know, push the button, push, get the war going, get the war going. But he refused, and he said, I refuse to be the one who does this to the world. Mm. And after that day, suddenly his actions changed totally, and he became a very, very powerful individual that just wanted to change the world into this beautiful place it's meant to be. And he said, I'm going to crush the CIA into 1,000 pieces. He got rid of some of the absolute tops in the CIA, one of them being Alan Dulles, that was also very much involved in the creation of Operation 40. And he said, we're going to get rid of the Federal Reserve Bank, and start printing our own money, which is absolutely unheard of, because that is one of the main tools for this global elite to control the financial situation of the states and indirectly the world. He also said, we're going to withdraw out of Vietnam before 1965. Everybody's going to be out. And at that point in 62, the war hadn't even started really in Vietnam on the American mm-hmm. part. It was a French war, but it was connected to the Golden Triangle. We're talking drugs now.
Yeah.
And drugs, weapons, pedophile trafficking, oil, these are main ingredients in the whole play around this cabal. You know, these are the things that you need to look for when you try to understand so-called religious wars or wars started because of terror acts. I tell you, every single time you start looking into it, you will find that the reason for these wars are a totally different one, and the ingredients are, like I said, weapons, oil, drugs, pedophile trafficking, organ trafficking, these type of ingredients.
Yeah.
Anyway, so once he it just freaked the whole elite out when JFK started moving around like that. He also got his brother Bobby Kennedy to start a witch hunt on the mob that up until then had been more or less unknown, because J. Edgar Hoover, they were blackmailing J. Edgar Hoover because he was a cross-dresser and a homosexual, and he had up to that point totally denied that the mob existed at all. I mean, he was the director of the FBI for many years. And up until then, it was like, nope, the mob does not exist. But it did big time. Mm. So when Bobby Kennedy suddenly went for them, they also got very, very upset because they had helped JFK get into the White House. And now he was thanking them by tracking them down. And over the first year when Bobby Kennedy was going for it, there was a 700% raise in the amount of verdicts against mob members. So they were really getting threatened big time. Mm-hmm. So the decision was made to take him out, and it was a coalition between rogue elements within the CIA, the mob, the military industrial complex, very complicated setup, the whole thing, Secret Service, the Dallas police, and so on. And everybody supplied shooters, you know, just like when they killed Julius Caesar, everybody had to stab him so that everybody's hands was dipped in blood and nobody could point accusing on anyone else or become a whistleblower without taking themselves down. And it's the same thing was done here. So all parts involved supplied shooters. And many of the shooters in Dealey Plaza, because there was multiple shooters in triangular fire, came from Operation 40. Shooters, spotters, some of the radio operators, Operation 40. Mm-hmm. Then when it came to Robert Kennedy, you had members of Operation 40 once again were present when he was taken out. Especially there was one man called David Morales. He was a very, very violent man, he was the guy who was present when Robert Kennedy was shot together with two very high up CIA officers. They were not the ones doing the shooting. They were the one, controlling the whole operation. And he was also the guy who later, together with Felix Rodriguez, who was another member of Operation 40, was sent down to Bolivia to track down Che Guevara. Most people nowadays only know Che Guevara from posters and t-shirt prints and so on, but he was a partner of Fidel Castro, and he was becoming like a myth, somebody they had major problems with. You know, martyrs and myths are some really tricky things to deal with because they're sometimes more powerful than the human being itself. So they decided to take out Che Guevara, and Felix Rodriguez and David Morales were sent down to Bolivia, where they got some local soldiers to help, and they tracked down Che Guevara. Felix Rodriguez ordered him killed, and David Morales was the one who executed him. David Morales, also, he was later named the top assassin of Latin America for the CIA. I mean, we're talking big-time players. They were... After this very successful JFK assassination, they were the team that was being used for decades to follow, not under the same name. They kept changing the name of the group for different operations and so on, but they were the core group. And some of these guys are still around, active, you know, so it's incredible. 50, 60 years down the line, and they're still around.
Yeah, so these groups still exist now, obviously, with different members in them. Are we able to, have you done your research enough to be able to name these people, or would that really put you in a dodgy situation?
No, I've named them. You mean the ones that are still here?
Yeah, the ones that are here now doing and going out there and I suppose doing the bidding of the elites, because basically they are the mafia. You know, if for want of a better word, I'm not saying, you know, from Sicily or whatever, you know, the actual the Godfather group. I'm talking about the people that are running this. They are secret societies, and that's what JFK wanted to expose and expose to the people and get rid of, because they were the ones controlling the banks, the corporates, the whole lot.
I tell you, when you look into this, you're talking about the mob and the CIA and so on. It was very confusing the first couple of years because I couldn't understand how... I read like a couple of hundred books around the JFK assassination. And in one book, for instance, one guy was working for the CIA. Then in another book, he was part of the mob. And in another one, he was employed by FBI. And in a fourth one, he was doing extra work for the Secret Service. And I was like, my God, it can't be you know, that somebody must be lying or having false information. But it turned out, no, they were all true. And I tell you, nowadays, the CIA and the mob, you can't, I mean, they're in bed with each other to an extent that they're like different side of the same coin. And they're just being used, like if they need to take out someone on national ground inside the state, they just use the mob. And if they need to take out someone abroad, they use their own people, you know. And it's unreal when you see how all of these things that looks like they're there for our protection are absolutely the opposite.
And like you could even say, Ollie, that the mainstream media is part of that mafia assassination group, because they are assassinating people's characters and all the rest of it.
There are different ways of taking people out. And David Attlee Phillips, like I mentioned before, he was actually a propaganda expert. I mean, he was head of one of these assassinations team, but he used to brag and say, I can kill more people with my typewriter than you could ever do in your whole life. You know?
Right.
So just like you say, my God, they can kill people. And, what they do is, assassinating people can get quite messy, you know, because, you have to cover things up and you have to, depending on, how you do it. Normally if they need to get rid of somebody, or if somebody is tracking them down or don't give up or something like that, what they normally do is they try to scare them off, just get them, you know, give them a warning, maybe kill their dog or threaten them in phone calls and so on. But if that doesn't work, then they go for, the character assassination, you know, they just, you know, when you're not at work, they fill your computer at work with like 1500 pedophile photos or something like that, and then get it out in the local newspaper. That guy, from that day, he's done, you know?
Yeah.
And how can you defend yourself saying, my God, it's not me? Or sometimes what they also do is they just fill somebody's bank account up with like, put in like 500,000 pounds or something like that, and just get them for tax evasion, or say that they've been bribed or you know.
No, it's absolutely incredible.
It's so easy.
Yeah.
Or they go for credit card fraud, or, you know, so that's the way to do it. And if people don't back off after that, they go into more violent versions, suicides, car accidents, blow up planes, you name it,
it is amazing. I've got a friend who's living in Spain now, Lawrence Burton. He's been on my show sort of before Christmas and a few shows before that. And back in the day when he was a young man, he had some ideas about a new propulsion, if you like, that cars and vehicles and all the rest of it can use. And he wanted to go public with it. And when he just about got to the stage where, you know, he might have got backing, he might have got people on his side, he might have got this stuff out to the world for the world to benefit from it, obviously not using oil and all the rest of it, he was set up. He went to a hotel room, which was supposed to be a meeting, and they basically placed loads of drugs in the room and had him arrested.
I would say standard procedure. Yeah. They, you know, when somebody threatens the oil industry, we're talking about the same power group, you know,
yeah.
And there are all these wonderful inventions already out there. You know, it's just that they're being totally covered up and hidden from the general public. But there, you know, cars running on water, all type of incredible free energy devices and so on that has just been shut down by the same power elite. And it's very sad to see things like your friend here, but it's standard procedure. You know, anyone that starts threatening them, boom, gets taken out.
Yeah, he was basically taken out for about 20 years, left in prison. So that's him out of the
way. He was 20 years in prison.
Mm.
Oh, yeah. Well, I tell you, there's a lot of innocent people still behind bars.
Absolutely. So, and if they're not behind bars with a criminal act, then they do the old insanity thing, don't they, and give them an injection and end up in a lunatic asylum or somewhere like that.
I've had friends who've been, there was one of the guys, one of my friends who died strangely afterwards. He was, the thing was that in the Olof Palme assassination, the Swedish prime minister, there was some local involvement, because when you...
You still there, Ollie? We've just lost you, I think. Ollie, can you hear me? Okay, I'm going to put on a tune, and why not start off with one of the four. Let's have a bit of Jimi Hendrix, and let's have a Hey Joe. Welcome back to Out of the Bag. This is Sean Maguire live on People's Internet Radio. That's www.peoplesinternetradio.com, where we are seeking solutions, and hopefully now we have Ollie Damagard back with us. Ollie, are you back with me?
I am indeed. Can you hear me?
You can indeed. We dropped the call there for a bit of Skype intervention. I don't know what was going on there.
I tell you, every single time I'm on countless interviews, and every single time you get into these areas, boom, there's some kind of technical issues.
Well, let's not get into conspiracy theory, Ollie.
Okay. I'm just saying it's a pattern. It's more or less every single time. So,
okay,
I don't know.
Yeah, well, sure, you know, it's evening time around the world, and maybe the Skype is just being overused. And
you have no idea.
Haha, exactly. So look, I played a bit of Jimi Hendrix there.
Yeah.
A bit of Hey Joe. And maybe it was a sign for us to get into these individual people. But do you still have a bit of background before we get there?
I would like to continue with Operation 40 just
please
a little bit.
Do.
Because
please do.
This Operation 40 was very central also in the... so many operations. I'm just telling you a few of them, because they've been, like I say, the core group, the members of this group for decades, also training other assassins, and the assassination of JFK has been used as a perfect example of how a political assassination is carried out, how the whole thing is blamed on a patsy, how the whole setup with Triangular Fire, the whole setup with their own investigation on standby, so as soon as the shots are fired, boom, in goes their own people, with the only task to cover the whole thing up and get everything pointed away from the real truth. And also with a commission, like the Warren Commission that followed afterwards, also part of the crime, but there to just cover the whole thing up. These are parts of the template I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm.
But when it comes to Operation 40, they were also deeply involved in the killing and assassination of the president in Chile, Salvador Allende, on 9/11. They love the dates as well. They're really into numerology and other things like that. It was done in 1973 on the 9/11. And they were also very central in the whole that was called Operation Condor, which was tracking down Allende supporters globally.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the people they tracked down and assassinated was a man by the name Orlando Letier, which they blew up with a car bomb in Washington, D.C., on Embassy Row there.
Okay.
But also... when you see the assassination of John Lennon, I don't know if did we get into that last time?
We did a little bit, but not as much as we'd like to.
Okay, because I can just explain what was happening at that time, because now we're getting into the rock stars. And the areas that these people have been trying to control for a long time are areas that have impact on the main population. We're talking media, we're talking the film industry and mm-hmm. the music industry, because that is where they can get to the youth and to the big masses. So when somebody like John Lennon started speaking out for peace, pro-peace, for love and for, you know, for stop going to war, stop... just going along with this awful agenda that they were trying to carry out, they became a major problem. People like Lennon, people like Lady Diana. The reason why she was taken out, I believe, was because she was a very big opponent against landmines, and landmines are very crucial for the elite's agenda.
Mm-hmm.
But when it came to Lennon, he was just about to make a major comeback. They got rid of him earlier on, some years earlier on, where the FBI really tried to do everything they could to shut him up or shut him down.
They tried to make him look like a drugged up, hippie-fied, let's make sure that the mainstream people who listen to the mainstream media won't accept any word he says, let's ridicule it as much as possible. And just as he was about to make that comeback, it's when he was looking over the Atlantic Ocean and there was the punk revolution going on in England, and he bloody wanted part of that. He really did. And that was the time for him to step forward.
And that was the time for them to stop him, because they saw that as a major threat as well.
Yes.
And because the punk, the whole punk movement was also one of these things that was totally against them, and they couldn't control. They tried to, but they couldn't. But with John Lennon, he had just recorded his comeback album, and he was planning for a big peace tour mm-hmm. in the States, and it was going to be followed with a European tour and so on. So I think that was the reason why they took him out at the time they did. When you look at the crime scene, the official story is that Mark Chapman, the guy that is supposed to have shot him, he had been standing outside the Dakota building in New York near Central Park from early morning, the whole day, just waiting to see Lennon, and because he was absolutely obsessed with him, they say. And then in the evening, when they arrived from the studio in the limo, stopped, and Yoko Ono left. The limo, started walking into the building, and John followed like 5-6 meters behind. At that point, Mark Chapman, this is the official story, was standing to the right of the limo, to the right of John Lennon. He passed him and started walking into the entrance when several shots were fired and Lennon went down. He started crawling into the building. He was later taken to hospital where he was declared dead. But when you look at the evidence from the crime scene, all shots fired hit Lennon straight from the left, not behind and from the right, which would be the normal thing if Mark Chapman would be the guilty one. So by using normal intelligence, I mean, you don't have to be a very intelligent to understand that if the shots were fired from a totally different position, there's a major possibility of a second shooter there, or that the actual shooter was standing there, I would say. And at this time, this day, there was a doorman with a past in the CIA. His name was Jose Perdomo.
Okay.
And he's the guy who officially, after the shots were fired, ran over, grabbed the gun from Chapman and screamed to him, do you know what you just did? You shot Lennon. After he shouted that, Chapman turned into like a zombie and was just standing there waiting, doing absolutely nothing except waiting to be taken by the police. And this is a very normal behavior when it comes to so-called Manchurian candidates or mind-controlled patsies, that they're triggered. They've been going through awful, awful torture and different extreme methods to get their mind split into multiple personalities so that they can activate them in and out by code words like "you just shot Lennon" or something like that, to activate or deactivate and make the go jump from one personality to the other.
Mm-hmm.
And a very typical pattern of these people, because they're not often trusted to be the assassin themselves, but they are very often used to take the fall, you know, to take the blame for it. And a typical behavior is this zombie-like state that they go into. They're then picked up, and then afterwards, when you hear them talk about the event, it's almost like a loop, like a recorded loop. They use the exact same words. They no emotions. They can't remember anything from 5-6 hours before the event.
Yes.
And then it's first when they get arrested, that's when their memories jumps into action again. But this guy, Jose Perdomo, who disappeared I heard his name just mentioned the minutes after it happened, and then he just disappeared. He was then named as the doorman, but then he disappeared as well. And it was first like 7 years later, I think, that it was starting to get exposed again, his identity.
Right.
And the only reason why I noticed it was because I recognized the name, because he was for almost 10 years one of the highest ranking officers in Operation 40.
Uh-huh.
Surprise, surprise.
So he was part of the assassination group, and therefore he was bound to be, or one of them was bound to be on the scene to make sure that it was all covered up and presented the way it should.
He was the shooter. Was the shooter.
So you believe he shot John Lennon rather than Mark Chapman?
Mark Chapman had nothing to do with it.
Okay.
He's a total patsy.
Brilliant, okay.
Yeah. But there are signs of possibly a second shooter. And his name, you were talking about people that are still alive. His name, if the information that I have been given, his name is Clyde Forshaw. He's a resident of Toronto, and he's been used together with his partner and cousin, Walter Tabinski. They have been used as some of the head cleaners. They call them head cleaners from the early 60s all the way up until today. He's a bus driver, Clyde Forshaw. He's been using that as a cover for many, many years. But he's also doing a lot of bank robberies at the moment. He's the geezer bandit. And he's also, I forgot the other one he's using, but the geezer bandit. He's almost become a bit of a legend because he's so old. And he's still pulling off these bank robberies together with his son and so on. But these people have been part of taking out so many, you know, witnesses, people involved in these assassinations, people who knew too much. Because around the JFK assassination, for instance, I've got a list of more than 300 names of people who died in strange circumstances. I saw there was one researcher that had done some calculations, and he said the chances of dying brutal or dying young are 1 to 1 trillion. No, it's 1 trillion times higher than for a normal person if you had anything to do or knew or any part of the JFK assassination. Okay. And also you will see a very clear pattern after these assassinations. There is like a cleanup team that goes in and deals with whatever problem occurs in a very violent way.
Okay. Well,
I just want to say Walter Tabinski, if you see the JFK movie, he is the one that has been taken. They took photos of when he came out from the Cuban embassy in Mexico City trying to make them believe that he was Lee Harvey Oswald.
Right.
But they did that and the Soviet embassy as well. So you can see the photos that it's shown in the JFK film, but it's also very central in many JFK books because he was also in Dealey Plaza, Walter Tabinski. When you see the limo, the motor cage, when it goes around the corner, passes the Texas School Book Depository, and it's just by the Freeman, the Stemmons Freeway sign, just when the first shots are fired, look to the left, or if you look at the Zapruder film, look just above him, and you will see a man dressed in khaki clothes, light clothes, with a big, big black bulletproof vest on, aiming some kind of weapon at JFK just when they pass. He's one of the people involved in the whole thing. And Clyde Forshaw, he's on the other side behind one of a white concrete wall standing next to a 1961 Plymouth, one of the shooters. But there were multiple shooters, but these are two of the people. Very, very unknown. I just heard about them this last year. Okay. So a very incredible witness. So how
can we go forward and present this information to the world, Ollie? Do you know, with JFK in particular? I mean, it's okay and well and good getting here and going on radio stations and all the rest of it and saying that it was a conspiracy fact that he was taken out not by a lone shooter, but by you know, the CIA, basically. I mean, it all leads back to the CIA, and then you go back as far as the same template being used from Roman times.
It's a lot bigger than the CIA. The CIA is just an agency. You have to understand the word Central Intelligence Agency. It's an agency that can be hired, you know. It's used by corporations for their benefit, and the CIA are carrying out these things. So the CIA is just one part of it. You have a whole big, incredible power structure behind it. They're just one of the tools. So it's much bigger than the CIA.
Okay, so it's that the whole military complex as well are involved. So
Then
you get into the religious structures and corporate structures as well. So it's quite remarkable that these few, as you say, thousand old farts are running the planet via all this this machinery they have underneath them.
It really is like the Wizard of Oz, you know, with this old wizard with a very scary voice that screams out, "I'm powerful and you're weak," you know. And then once you get exposed, when you pull the curtain, it's a small little old guy with a microphone and a massive big amplifier, and nothing else. You're talking about a fart. I think that is a very good description. It's mm-hmm. just a fart in the universe, you know. but there, through media, through this black box that we have in front of us, it's just being pumped out. "Oh, I'm powerful and you're weak, you're weak." So the idea is, I would say, part of the awakening is to see that how powerful we are, and get the power back, not in a violent way, but awaking to see the power we have. Because I tell you, I think it's amazing what the times that are about to come here, because it will be the first time for centuries where the human race has a chance to show why it's here, you know, without being manipulated, without being duped, and without being fooled around in all of these odd ways and manipulated with their minds and drugged down. And I tell you, incredible times are ahead, incredible times.
Yeah.
I've spoken to I have no idea about finances and the financial situation in the world and how these banking, I have no idea. But I've been in contact with people on a very high level that know about these things. And they say that, actually they mentioned the 48 hours, I have no idea. But if we say like 2 months, that the whole financial balance, if the intention is there, could be sorted globally. You know, And if you look at all the inventions that have been pushed down and covered up, you know, I mean, we're talking at least 6,000 incredible inventions that I'm aware of that have been shut down that can really, really help humanity if they get let free, you know, and exposed. And also all of so many diseases that could be cured so easily if Big Pharma just took a step back, you know, because they control Big Pharma as well. It's totally connected with the oil industry. Most medicines are made from different parts in the oil industry and so on. So if the intention was there to heal the globe, I tell you, my God, the changes we would see, it would just be, it's going to be absolutely wonderful, miraculous. Yeah. So I'm super optimistic. I can't wait. And I tell you, it's just down the road. Give it a year or two.
Yeah, absolutely. D. Greer in the chat room just doesn't agree with anything we're saying, really, and goes against the word government. He's spent quite a lot of time saying, looking up the word and saying it doesn't mean that, and that's fair enough. But then I do want to address what he's saying in the chat room now, and maybe I shouldn't, but I'm going to anyway. He's asking, you know, we need government is what he's saying. And I'm saying, well, no, we just need public servants to do their job. We can autonomously govern ourselves. You know, we all know what's right, wrong. We know what's a crime, what isn't a crime. And those things can be highlighted just by ourselves pointing it out to each other. You know, I don't think that's a problem in the moving forward in the future. But he says, what will the public servants be doing, Sean? And Carl I. Wilding comes back with serving us the people. And I said serving the public. And doing what? And I'm saying simple administration, D. Looking after the sewage systems, the road systems, import, export, making sure that we have the food, going to the shops, making sure that the infrastructure is sorted, making sure that we're all working together as a team, whether that includes an agreed taxation, fair enough, to make things run, etc., etc. There's lots of accountancy jobs, lots of administration jobs, basically loads and loads of work for good people to do good things, not to control the minds of people for the elite few. There we go.
I'm not, I don't have solutions at the moment. I don't know how the future is going to be constructed, how we're going to do. I have absolutely no idea. I just think we need to take it one step at a time. And I just think that if people did what they're supposed to do without being corrupt, without having a hidden agenda, and doing it for the people, for the best of the people, you know, mm-hmm. that would be a major, major step forward.
Absolutely, you know. We do govern ourselves as it is. I mean, what people don't realise is that these governments wouldn't exist if we had absolute anarchy and chaos tomorrow. They'd be gone. Okay, so they're holding on to this illusion of being in control, really. And once we sort out the facts that we are in control, once we sort out the facts that we decide, you know, in our own homes, outside our own homes, what happens to our lives on a daily basis, what we need, what our requirements are, what we're willing to give as well. It's really important that we understand how powerful and how sovereign we all are.
Yeah. But at the same time, like I say, I'm not one that knows how to solve this, because I think